C2PR. Number 24A.
We come to the last prayer, the prayer of love. And it is the prayer that we epitomized as the prayer of glorifying the perfection of being. We have here the highest tone of that prayer is spiritual understanding. Here the spiritual understanding is then when we glorify with our understanding the perfection of God, and this naturally brings us into unity with that very perfection, with the perfection of love. And the text is showing all that tone of love, namely the tone of complete deliverance, of complete salvation. You get the tone of love here. It's the prayer really now of holiness. It's no more to gain holiness, but now it's the prayer of holiness itself. And therefore, one finds here renderings that are rejoicing, as she said, in beauty and bounty. You get a very light, happy, joyous, glorious tone that it surely calls down infinite blessing. You have just that shower of love that comes down. It's the highest prayer, she says in here. It is the loftiest adoration. All these are terms which he uses here, the prayer which covers all human needs. It's the prayer that deals with the first lie and all liars. You can see again the universal sense of love comes in. It's the prayer of heaven-born aspiration. It's no more a prayer where we aspire to know God, but it's now heaven-born aspiration. The prayer that heals the sick instantaneously. So we get all that glorifying in this short text of only about a page. And you see again that we say, let's see the differentiation between the other prayers, and you feel that this is a prayer that we never touched before. It has a completely different field of an atmosphere than what we had before. So we just go through that simple text and see how we catch that tone. Now it is that she starts out with Christians rejoice. Up to this point, it was always to show how we get the Christian sentiment, so to say, how to become a Christian. Now we have arrived at that point. Truth, life, and love has come in. The Christ has come in into the closet. And now we go out and see that that prayer is answered. We are Christians. It's no more a question to become Christians. So Christians rejoice in secret beauty and bounty. The first time we hear that tone of that beauty and bounty, where thought is just dwelling in the perfection of being, in the fulfillment of being, in the universal sense of being, where everything is there in an overflowing way. So it's rejoicing in secret beauty and bounty. Hidden. Now we have now the real hiding, not like in the fourth prayer where we are hiding our hypocrisy under something, but now it's the true sense of being hidden. Hidden from the world, but known to God. You get mind. What a statement for prayer. It's now really resting in that consciousness where we just rejoice over that which is here in beauty and bounty, where we rejoice on the perfection of being, where we see really the fulfillment of being, and not trying to get fulfillment, not trying to get perfection, and it is hidden from the world. The world doesn't know it. The world doesn't know it. It's absolutely hidden from the world. The whole world doesn't know what we are doing here. But I think the world must feel the impact of it, because spiritual consciousness, as we have seen, the prayer of spiritual consciousness, that is really touching everything. And we have seen that all may avail and benefit from prayer. It isn't just those who pray per se or by proxy that get the reward, have we seen in the chapter, in the prayer of life. All get it. No treatment is lost. No right contemplation and realization of perfection is ever lost. Somewhere in the world, it touches the needing thought. And this naturally is something that we must trust more and more. We must trust that ideas work, and that we must trust that they work the way they want to work, and not the way we want them to work. And that gives us that rest and peace within ourselves, which really can be at peace within oneself and say, I rejoice in secret beauty and bounty. The world does not know it, but known to God. Known to God. So we start out to see that if we go out from the perfection of being, that perfection of being knows what has to be achieved in the world, what has to be done in the world. I must now say that I had for a minute, I'm not going to interpret the text just because it's not in the text and does not belong into the text of prayer, but it may be just a good thing perhaps to bring out, though it has nothing really to do with the chapter on prayer. But reading this, you know, known to God, I always feel very much that students have difficulty in seeing that the blessing of our attitude or consciousness is not transmitted through our thoughts, that through our thought people are blessed, the nation is blessed, that our thoughts are blessing the world. That's not so. Thank God not. Think of the limitation about it. But I feel that they are not enough trusting the idea of God. You know, it is seeing really the Christ at work and the Christ order at work that has been taught in the classes, that we should trust much more, that we really should be able not to be too much concerned with what's going on in the world and thinking that we should interfere with our better thoughts and outline what should be done, and to think, are we going to do the right thing? Do we have an impact with our thoughts and with what we think? It is much more, which is afterwards just hinted to here, that we must have a much greater trust in the Christ idea. The Christ works by itself. We can't make it work. And the Christ idea works the way the Christ wants to fulfill its plan. The Christ has a plan. And we do not know that plan. And we better agree to ourselves that we do not know our plan. Just as Paul was bringing it out that we don't know the plan of God about the circumcised and the uncircumcised, how suddenly the uncircumcised will get the blessing and the circumcised will not get the blessing, etc., etc. He brings that out so clearly that the religious at his time, the Jewish sense of saving the world was all wrong. That God has another plan than what we think religiously or humanly or morally what should happen. We should be completely free from any material conception, from any human view, opinion. Completely free, that's one of the great attitudes, to be completely empty of outlining and wishing that things will happen that way and how things should be done. There is much more power in our peaceful consciousness that is not apathetical because it doesn't attack error, but that is much more powerful because we leave it to the Christ idea and don't interfere with the Christ idea and the Christ plan how things should work out. I think perhaps yesterday night I should have brought that in perhaps a bit more or bring it as a point that in this present world we know that we are going through a difficult period. Everybody knows it by now. It's no more so, you know, as it was during the war, when you had a nice sign over your desk in the office which said, the possible we do at once, the impossible just takes a little bit longer. Today the impossible has become impossible. That doesn't take a bit longer. It's humanly just no more manageable. And we fool ourselves if we think it's humanly manageable. It doesn't work anymore. We are entering a completely new era, the era of love. And therefore the prayer of love is adapted to that era, which will say, well, we don't know. It's hidden to the world, but known to God. We must have that trust that we know that God knows. We do not know what God knows and how He will work out the thing. But we know that God knows. And we know much more than that. We know that mind knows infinitely. That alone mind knows, and no human mind in the world, no political mind, nor military mind, nor economical mind knows. There is only one mind, and that one mind knows, hidden from the world. Here we are hidden away within four walls. The world does not know what we are doing. You go down to the meals, and we mix there with other groups. They have the faintest idea what you are doing, spiritually. Even if you would tell them you are interested in metaphysics or in divine metaphysics or in the science of being, they wouldn't know the first thing what goes on here. It's like a birth in Bethlehem. Nobody knows what went on there. Nobody knew that. Think of all the people that gathered there in all those hostels and so on. They had the faintest idea that there was something going on, the birth of an idea that would crack the world into pieces, the old world, and would establish a completely new world, a new era that lasts now already 2,000 years, no matter if we have corrupted it or not, but still the impact is there. So we should also have here that sense that God knows what to do, even if we don't know what He's going to do. but we can trust that knowing. And that is what she brings out in this paragraph as we go on, just from the standpoint first of prayer. Because she says, self-forgetfulness, you forget, instead of knowing yourself, you forget what you are. For self-forgetfulness, that's a tone of mind, purity and affection. We have again a sense of spirit, our constant prayers, they don't change, they are changeless prayers, practice, not profession, principle, understanding, not belief. We had that in the fifth prayer, that only on the basis of understanding and not on the basis of belief we should live. They gain the ear and right hand of omnipotence. Now, after those five attitudes, you get the sixth, which is always then the outcome of it. We gain the dominion, the authority. We gain the right hand, that was always the power of omnipotence, the sixth. And what comes out of it is, and they assuredly call down infinite blessings. Seventh. Did you ever think of that? One sentence. In one sentence, she recapitulates the fullness of it. The whole thing. Says, what is really that secret beauty and bounty which is known to God? What does God know? She said, the best thing that you can know is that you forget first yourself. That we don't use our head, so to say, our brain. That we have that terrific willingness, as it is shown in the scientific obstetrics, first to start out without, not to have any material or human conceptions. Then we are empty, then we are a blank page, and then God can write on that blank page what he wants to write. It's not already full of our mortal mind writing, and then when God wants to write on it, one can't read it anymore because it gets mixed up. It's just a blank, just be blank right at the beginning. Forget what you are, what you know you are. Forget every personal knowing. Keep that purity, keep it pure. That is, she says, the constancy of prayer. You don't change that, stick to it, the third. Then practice that. That's the fourth one. See, practice, not profession. Then live that with your understanding, and that brings us, that gains the ear and right hand of omnipotence. That gives us dominion over the world, and it assuredly calls down infinite blessing. I don't know where we should find a way how to pray, if not in the order of, as it is presented here in that textbook over and over and over. It's always the same great line of being, not just of thinking, but of being. And she says, trustworthiness. Now you come to the trust of which I was speaking. Later on we have to trust the Christ idea. Here in the chapter on prayer, it's just the first inkling, which says, trust your prayerful attitude. Trust that that sevenfold prayerful attitude is going to do the trick. That it has an impact. So trustworthiness is the foundation of enlightened faith. It's that faith which saves the world, which saves the sinner. It is enlightened, you get again that main tone of mind in it, known to God. That's enlightened faith when we entertain that sevenfold prayer. But it says it must be trusted and not doubted. We have to put, so to say, the whole trust in something, in what we know, and know that that is really calling down infinite blessing. Without a fitness for holiness, as she comes back to holiness, without the fitness for holiness, we cannot receive holiness. Remember in the earlier prayers, we already had that sense of holiness, but very differently. It was already in spirit as truth, where she said, but the longing to be better and holier. So there was first the longing. And then later on, it was in the tone of life as mine, where she said, the desire for holiness is necessary or is requisite or so to gain holiness. See where the preceding stages for holiness. And so here now we have the final statement and says just without holiness we cannot receive holiness. But how do we have holiness? Well, just through what we read here in this paragraph, namely that sevenfold statement of prayer. Known to God, what known to God? Mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth. That is known to God. And that is, when we have that attitude, that's the fitness for holiness. And we cannot, and we can then receive holiness. We know holiness in the third degree as the last value, the seventh value. Here again, in the prayer of love, holiness is a central idea. But now we do not gain holiness. We are not desiring holiness. We are holiness. So, I always love that passage about Christians rejoice in what God knows, even if it's unknown to the world. And I say to myself, what do I know? What is it that is known to mind? In a great sense, mind knows only itself. Mind only one mind, the only mind there is. And therefore, this takes care of every error. If I see that because mind knows only mind, therefore no mortal mind is known at all. Therefore no mortal mind exists at all. So in the last prayer I don't have to deal with all kinds of error, with all kinds of mortal mind business, the merchandise of mortal mind. Don't have to deal with that anymore. Because I have reached through true prayer, I have reached that sense that they go out now from mind, known to mind, known to God, and to mind only that wonderful, all creative, active, powerful, intelligent mind is known, and that mind knows no mortal mind, therefore it knows nothing about mortal mind making its dirty tricks. That mind knows what? It only knows spirit. That mind does not know anything but all the other synonymous terms, so it knows only spirit. Therefore it knows that it is the only mind. There is no other mind besides it. So that mind knows that there never was a mortal mind. So that mind knows that mortal mind could never have acted besides the one mind, because mind is spirit and therefore the only mind that there exists. Can you see, you begin to handle the noumenon of evil. We do not handle then the phenomena of evil, the individual suggestion of evil. We always go right to the noumenon, where we see that the one mind knows only itself as the one mind, and a spirit knows it's the only mind, so it handles at once that there can be no mortal mind. So you handle the noumenon of evil, namely the counterfeit of mind, mortal mind. If we handle the counterfeit of mind as mortal mind, then we handle at the same time, again through that redundancy principle, all the tricks of mortal mind. If there is no mortal mind, then we have also handled all the tricks of mortal mind. Do I make myself plain about that? So, again, when one comes to the last prayer, nowhere she says that it's the only prayer and that there is only the evil one, not many evil, then we begin to see not only that we work out from the capitalized terms in its fullness, but that we handle from that standpoint the noumenon of evil. The noumenon of evil is the belief that there is an opposite of the seventh synonymous term. If we can handle that belief, we have handled the root of all evil, the liar of all lies. And you can see naturally that we can only do that if we have a tonality sense of the synonyms. Else, it naturally doesn't do a trick. If the synonymous term are for us terms, and not tonality, spiritual atmosphere, then naturally words don't do a trick. But if we have the tonality of the synonymous terms, which include all ideas, per se, all ideas, then this handles the belief that there is an opposite of those synonymous terms. The opposites are noumenon opposites. If we handle the noumenon, that includes all the phenomenon. So we handle with the capitalized term always the noumenon of evil, and with it, the liars. We handle the lie and the liars. So, very often, actually, when we say that, and also, I must say, as one goes on in the textbook, one naturally comes then to certain teachings in the textbook which say that you must know the specific evil, that you must analyze and uncover and annihilate specific traits of evil with a specific truth. And we see that, but we know that that is on the level of Christian Science, and not on the level of divine science. Therefore, we must always have a balanced sense. We must know where we are. Is our consciousness on the level of divine science, or is our consciousness on the level of Christian science? If our consciousness is on the level of Christian science, or even on the level of argumentation, then we jolly well have to handle specific errors, the phenomena of evil. But the point I wanted to bring out is that that's fine, but that there is something coming to this age which wants to go us further, which wants to say, go further from Christian Science to absolute Christian Science, go to divine science. There must come a time when we are more acquainted with divine science than we are right now. And we can only get acquainted with divine science if through Christian science, absolute Christian science, we have the tonality of the capitalized terms. We have, therefore, the spirit of the capitalized terms. Before we do not have that, we better are staying where we are, namely on the level of Christian Science, and handle, as Mochi will say later on, and handle evil specifically. So that she can say, Christian Science has been revealed to me as one intelligence analyzing, uncovering, and annihilating, I don't know, the claims of evil or erroneous sense or whatever is of a negative. But that, you see, will be overformed as we begin to get the atmosphere of the capitalized terms, because they always handle the noumenon of evil and not the phenomena of evil. Sorry, that's not right. They always handle the noumenon of evil and included in it the phenomena of it.